Thank you so much. I'd like to, before we get started, this effort is one that couldn't be done without two of my partners, one of which is here, Dr. Richard Whitberg from the Mid-Ohio Health Department. This is all done in West Virginia, and then one who's not here, who is a school nurse and one who developed this screening that a lot of our work has been based on, Karen Northrup. All right, in terms of the presentation today, we want to just basically describe to you one of the latest studies that we've looked at. And again, this is based on the life screening that I'm going to tell you about that Karen developed in the Mid-Ohio Valley, in Parkersburg, West Virginia area. Based on these screenings, we've been able to do a series of research that's looking at everything from physical activity and academic achievement to most recently acanthosis nigricans. How you screen for it, is it predictive of insulin resistance, is it something that we can use in the schools, and if a child has it, can he or she get rid of it? So that's that latter part, the AN, is what we're going to talk about today. I have no disclosures to report. And so moving on, in terms of acanthosis nigricans, or why we're even talking about it, we have to take a step back to look at type 2 diabetes. And particularly in West Virginia, this is a pertinent health issue for our children. It's something that people, that children grow up, family histories are prevalent. They all refer to it as sugar. It's a common day description, and they really want information about it. So it's something that's we really need to study in West Virginia, but it's also an issue across the nation. 33% prevalence of type 2 diabetes, which is equal to 8.5 per 100,000 individuals. This equals around $50 billion in terms of costs for that particular healthcare issue. So when you look at type 2 diabetes and you think of insulin resistance, you start talking about screening for that, which can be kind of costly. If you look at trying to identify insulin and glucose of the children in the school system, sometimes you have resources, sometimes you do not. And for the case of West Virginia, we do not have. We do have other programs that can screen for these and do provide this information, but not on all the children. So that's why we're talking about acanthosis nigricans, or AN, today, as a potential marker, albeit we're going to talk about its predictive nature or lack thereof. But being able to utilize that in a school system, which Karen has been able to do, among most of the children in that, and then what that can tell us. Okay, we've already talked about kind of the study questions for this particular was, how does AN relate to obesity? Does it, and how does it relate? Can you change this marker over time? And then what factors can help us understand how we can change it over time? So let me tell you a little bit more about the screening. Again, this is something that Karen, as a school nurse, developed on her own in a very large school system, one that most children, unless they opt out, participate in. This is among kindergarten, second, and fifth grade students. Okay, and this is, West Virginia is very rural, and this particular area is not as rural as some of West Virginia, but all of West Virginia is rural. So you can kind of compare and contrast if you'd like. Life health screening, of course, you get the height, weight, and the acanthosis nigricans. This is done from 2007 to currently, or this data particularly from 2011. Therefore, the children were longitudinally followed, which means that we had two cohorts here. We had kindergarten students who were then assessed as second graders, and we had second graders who were then assessed as fifth graders. So when I refer to cohort one, that's kindergartners to second grade. Cohort two is second to fifth. Okay. All right. In particular, here are the measures that are done for these children. School nurse and a couple volunteers that you can gather along the way assess height using a stadiometer in inches. For this particular study, we also, because we have a longitudinal look at this, change in height over time. Same thing with weight. Weight done in pounds per unit, and then change of weight in between the two assessments. Body mass index was then calculated based on those two, which was age and sex specific. We did something a little bit different that was based in literature, but rather than doing the change of BMI over time, we used this change in BMI per the individual student's ideal body mass. right? Because again, how kids change in that proportion, you really just can't get a difference variable. Or you could, but it's really going to get you're going to get a lot of 99th percentile. There's not a lot of specificity there. So we compare them to themselves in terms of an ideal, and that's that body mass index percentage difference in median. Then acanthosis nigricans, and I waited until now. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, if it's present, you have a dark marker at the base of the neck, and sometimes it could look like a dirt smudge. And many times in screening, you take your thumb just to make sure it's not. But it can be raised, and there are various grades of acanthosis nigricans. The more advanced it is, the higher it is. It's a ridge along. It can show up here in the crease of the elbow and other areas as well, but we look at it on the base of the neck. It can be darker with more advanced. And again, if it's present, then it could potentially mean that the child's insulin is abnormal or going in that direction. Now, literature is back and forth, particularly among children. The most recent review basically established that this marker is predictive of an increase in insulin resistance among kids. So we looked at these children across the longitudinal period, put them in four groups. Those who never had the marker at any point, those who lost the marker by the second assessment, those who gained it by the second assessment, and then those who kept it or retained it at both time points. Okay. So in terms of this sample, we had 7,337 children participating. Just out of that, 4,059 were in that cohort one, were kindergarten students then assessed in second grade. All right, AN prevalence. This is not different from what we see with AN. So AN to the general population is less than 1%. Most of those who have AN are morbidly obese. So in terms of the association between AN and obesity, yes, it is a significant one. In terms of who lost, so less than 1% lost that marker over time in this sample. Okay, and we'll get to the implications of this. It sounds kind of small, but we're going to take those successes where we can get it. 1.4 in the younger cohort and 3.4 in the older cohort gained the marker. So more in the older cohort, the second graders to fifth, gained that marker. Slightly less than 1% and a little over 2% of the older cohort kept that marker over time. Okay, and so this is a really busy table, but this again is more of the prevalence, the distribution of these items. We had slight comparable male-female distribution in our sample. You can see the mean height, weights, and the change variables over time for each cohort as you go down. So if you follow the first column, that's for the younger cohort. If you follow it all the way down, you have height, weight, and then the BMI. Then you have the change variables. And the AN, how many were in each group, lost, gained, retained the marker. Same thing with the older cohort on the right. So if you notice on the right-hand side, some of the change variables, you know, the kids were shifting weight a lot more between the second and fifth grades than they might have been between the kindergarten and second. All right, then if we look at our four groups based on some of our outcome variables. So here's the second question. First of all, how prevalent is AN? And do children gain, lose, maintain the marker over time? Second question is, what factors are associated with these changes of AN over time? So if we look at height, and we see the orange column are the ones that never had AN, and so on and so forth to the following to the right. What we notice is those that maintained the AN marker or who gained it tended to have the higher change in height, the higher change in weights, and usually increases, okay, as well as the higher BMIs compared to their own ideal. Notice in this far right section or grouping, those who lost the marker, you have a loss in BMI change. Okay. Now, interestingly, this change didn't have to be a lot. This loss of weight, obviously they're not losing height, but the loss of weight among this group didn't have to be substantial, and that's another take-home point that we'll come back to. This is the younger cohort. A similar pattern is found with the older cohort. Again, with those, I'm just going to focus on the BMI variable on the right for a minute. Those who gained the AN had the most weight gain, even compared to those that maintained the marker between the two parts. So if they gained weight in between that time period and gained the marker, they more likely gained the marker. If they maintained the AN, they might have maintained their weight proportionate to what they were supposed to gain developmentally. Again, we see among those that lost the marker, they tended to lose some BMI percentage. They lost some weight. Okay, and again, it didn't have to be a substantial amount. So some take-home points. Subsample of children who lost the AN marker, and I want to focus on that. Again, 1% of this sample lost the marker, and it might be small. However, it tells us a couple of things. If children can limit the weight gain in between a small period of time, 2 to 3 years of time, we could potentially prevent insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes further down the road. Okay, we know these things. Okay, decreased BMI by the second assessment, that these kids can lose the marker. Those who have it can lose it, and that's a positive message. All right, it's something that we know that we have to start looking at these things early, and we actually can intervene and make a change early as well. Okay, it only takes a short period of time, which I've already mentioned, and that this health screening that was done by school nurses in the schools can also serve as an intervention point or an identification of an intervention opportunity. Okay. Those who gain the marker, we've learned a couple of things. We've learned that, again, they can increase that weight quickly in a short period of time and put them at risk. And so we need to be really observant about what the children's health looks like, particularly in this early elementary school period. Okay. Obviously, there are some limitations. In terms of a West Virginia sample, we are almost always likely to get a predominantly Caucasian sample. So generalizability, particularly among the African American sample, where an AN prevalence is higher, a lot higher than this Caucasian samples nationally, we need to be aware of that. We need to have perhaps more frequently. Now, we've already talked about the burden of school nurses, right? But this highlights another role that they can play in terms of research, health surveillance, and interventions, and they already do, but outlining and highlighting what they're doing can make a difference. But perhaps doing that a little bit more often, because again, 2 to 3 years, a lot can happen. Then by the fifth grade, we stopped in fifth grade, but we know puberty sets in. And so how this changes all of these variables that we were looking at is something that should be looked at. Okay, so AN screening is inefficient. It's cost efficient. You don't have to get, or at least we didn't get, the insulin and glucose on every child. We used a marker, and we looked at what the implications were for that marker. Lifestyle changes could easily be incorporated here. We can introduce parents to prevention as well. In terms of some things that Karen has already been doing in the school system, and that with a collaboration with the health department, physical education changes, health education, food service modifications, and other health services for these students, once they're identified, would be needed. Okay, and here are my acknowledgments. Thank you.